Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Indeed, 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 it is Pancakes and Power Slams, another Tuesday night, episode 119. This is Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent Derek, coming to you live on a Tuesday night, the new Tuesday Night Titans. Of course, myself, Chris Featherstone, taking a bit of a break tonight. He's going to be on. You're going to have plenty of Chris. Don't worry about it. You're going to get your Chris fill. I'm going to be kind of leading the ship tonight just because that's what I do. And this is how I'm going to do it. This is Pancakes and Power Slams, everybody. And again, representing Chris Featherstone. Chris, are you out there? Can you give us a hello?
Yes, sir. I'm here recovering from the flu. So I appreciate Derek, as always, manning the ship. If the shipman needs a little breather. So that's what's going on today. And Derek has done a fantastic job over the past 118, 119 episodes, and he is going to give his more than 2 cents point of view by leading the show today, so it should be very controversial. Dun, dun, dun.
And it will be, and I'll give you 3 cents, 4 cents, 5 cents, whatever it needs, because this is Pancakes and Power Slams. We never have enough time to fill the 90 minutes that we're given. However, we're going to do the most that we can. We should start off with a trivia question tonight. I'm curious to know, anybody out there, Magnum PA, Magnum PA, what year was this unfortunate car accident? And we want to talk about Magnum PA. This is somebody who was an up-and-comer, somebody who was going to take over the wrestling world by storm. It's such a sad, sad thing to see somebody like that. It's so close, but doggone it, just didn't happen. But everyone, especially my era, my generation of wrestling fans, knows Magnum T.A., knows who he is, knows his story. What year was his unfortunate accident? A year I won't forget as far as wrestling goes. So we'll keep that. Twitter, chat room.
Definitely would have been a world champion, for sure.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Chime in. He would obviously been a world champion. And he was just there. I want to take it another notch further. Who was his last feud? Chris Featherstone, go ahead and answer if you know.
Oh, Blanchard.
Oh, Blanchard, of course. One of the most underrated horsemen of all time. And we love the Four Horsemen. The original lineup, in my opinion, is probably my favorite. Barry Windham being in there was great. Tully Blanchard, I think, is just one of those guys who can just really go on, be one of the pinnacle in the sports of wrestling. You won't hear his name come up too often, but when it does, for me anyway, I always thought he was, he carried the horseman in his own way. He took care of business that he needed to take care of and just continued to be one of the best United States champions there ever was.
He's a WWE Hall of Famer with the Horsemen.
Exactly, and that's great. Good for him. Hall of Famer. Give it up, 347-884-8452 if anybody wants to call in. Give your opinion on what's going on. Again, Tuesday Night Titan, Crave Wrestling, Pancakes and Power Slam. Let's get on with the show. First, we have Monday Night Raw, of course. Roman Reigns and Kane start off Raw. A little fight breaks out. And again, I'm still not following what they're really trying to do with this. It's, Kane is pretty much, he's not somebody that you can really rely on to say, okay, he's a dominant competitor now. He's not a dominant competitor. They want him to be. They want to keep Kane as this big, scary monster. But we've seen so much of him losing and him getting befuddled and just berated almost within the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, he's just not relevant enough. The WWE keeps using him to make fear strike in your heart. Like they'd almost do with Big Show. And you know what happens with Big Show. I mean, every time he comes out and he's got a big pop going, it's ruined. It's no good. You can't get behind a character like that. It's unbelievable. You know, I wish they'd do more for Big Show and people like Kane that have been there, put in their dues, paid their dues far more than just about anyone else in that locker room, and yet they're still being squashed, and this doesn't look... I mean, they may have their good moments every couple of weeks, but you know that something's coming to where they're just going to totally... Everything that they've been working for, everything that they built for, just falls in Kane's face, and there's nothing else to say for it. So I know Roman Reigns, up and coming, recently parted from The Shield, and all three of them have their own destinies in front of them right now, and what's going to happen with that? But the fight breaks out. Again, it's nothing that, you know, you can build Raw on. I mean, to watch that start out Monday Night Raw is a phenomenal show, but I just never really thought that Raw had the best intros as far as the first 20 minutes is usually just Stephanie McMahon and Triple H blabbering on about something. Orton comes out, throws his 2 cents in, which nobody really cares about anyway. And if you do, great. I personally don't. And it just really turns into the first 15, 20 minutes just doesn't really cut the mustard for what Monday Night Raw can be. And, it's, you know, they get into it more once the show gets started. But, again, you know, I love Triple H. Great in-ring talent. I mean, to me, I mean, he's a legend of the WWE as far as recent history goes. However, I just don't – his talk is boring, especially when he's with Stephanie. Stephanie's great to look at, but don't get me wrong – It's really just not that great. Stephanie McMahon Helmsley era from 2000, I believe. Same thing. It just wasn't really that great. B, you had Stone Cold Steve Austin there still. You had The Rock there to help carry the show. But without them, Triple H is just kind of a ball of gas. And Stephanie McMahon is pretty much similar. But kind of curious, Chris. Well, what did you think of the start of Raw last night and the typical intros to Raw, like the first 15, 20 minutes? Does it really do much for you to get you excited about the show?
Well, I was checking out. I don't know. I'm very critical on Roman Reigns right now because I think that he is the next face of the WWE. I think he is the next Rock of the WWE. They're finally giving someone basically to be the face of the WWE other than John Cena. And I think I'm just super critical on Roman Reigns. And I like the fact that they had him start the show. I like the fact that they are giving him the mic more. They're having him work on his nuances, his nonverbals, his cadences. And I think that, of course, we saw some nervousness in a few weeks ago and when he first got on the mic, when he was with The Shield. But I really, really think that he's doing much, much better with his mic work. Of course, he's not, you know, anywhere near the top. But at the same time, I think he's doing a really good job with getting better on the mic. It's only going to get better because we have to understand that when Rock was Rocky Maivia, and even just the infancy of his heel run as The Rock, the guy was not good on the mic, even as heel Rock. I mean, he was, you know, he had his ego. He was real brash. But at the same time, his mic work wasn't all that good. He was kind of robotic when he first turned heel. And I think that, you know, we're seeing a lot of that in Roman Reigns. His mic work in the beginning was not very good. Rollins is okay. Ambrose, of course, Ambrose is gold on the mic. So kind of hiding behind the shadows of them two on the mic, he kind of transitioned into really holding his own on the mic, and I think he's doing a much better job. So I've got some patience in Roman Reigns. As far as Kane's involvement, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head in every sense of the word. I don't think Kane – I mean, I really think Kane has no purpose in the WWE right now. He's the pawn of the authority. And, you know, Roman Reigns is a bit more graphic in his explanation, but, you know, he wasn't incorrect. I'll definitely say that. Having a less than one night reign as WWE champion back in 98, the last time he was WWE champion, and that was, you know, 16 years ago, and then he was world champ a few years back, but still, I mean, he's. I think that Kane is due for another world title reign, to be a WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Even if it's a transitional champion, I'd be totally okay with it. I think Kane has put so much work in the business that the guy, I mean, he's pushing 50 now, and I definitely think that he needs to be champ at least one time for all the work he's done. I mean, come on now. I mean, I really, really despise Kane's position right now with the company.
And everybody would get behind Kane. I mean, they really would, because that's what he deserves, and everyone knows he put the work in. And why wouldn't they? They should. That would be absolutely awesome. I'm an advocate for Kane. I know you are. I would totally get behind the Kane push, get him the title one more time, even though, like I said, he hadn't had it for like 16 years. I mean, I remember like back in 98 when the feud was Stone Cold.
Yep.
And it's overdue. Something needs to be done. He needs his final hurrah. He's just a pawn. He's a jobber. Just doesn't look good. And he deserves a lot more. All right, moving on.
Before you go forward, special shout-out to Jamie Noble, Joey Mercury, Finley, Dean Malenko, and Mike Rotunda coming out to try to stop Roman Reigns and Kane fighting. Of course, Finley got speared, but at least he got some TV time. And so, you know, Derek and I are both heavy, heavy traditionalists, and so looking at those names were, you know, it was seeing those people come out was really cool, I know, for me. And especially Rotunda, seeing how both of his boys, Bo Dallas and Bray Wyatt, are both, you know, top names or very featured names in the WWE right now. He has to be very happy as Pops, knowing that his boys are featured names in the company right now.
That's great. And Jamie Noble, I actually worked on a show with him once before Campbell, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Of all the guys there, he was the nicest one there. Shook my hand, that's who I was. I was a greenhorn at the time, which I was a rookie. I just started, not running for my nose. But, I mean, he made me feel like one of the guys. And I've met a lot of the big-time guys. They were all great. A few of them were kind of jerks, but most of them are great. I'll never forget, Jamie Noble was a class act. So I always want to see him. Special shout-out to Noble.
Absolutely.
After that, Wyatt versus Usos. The Usos lose. What's this showing for? I mean, for crying out loud, they're your up-and-coming tag team, and they've been losing. You got the Wyatts. You're still trying to do something with the Wyatts. Bray Wyatt's pretty much, he's got his run with Cena, and it's kind of boring, and we've talked about that. You got the other two. They just, you know, Roman and Harper didn't really do anything for the Wyatts, I don't think. I mean, I really don't think they add much value to the Wyatt brand. I mean, Bray carries it, makes the Wyatts what they are, and the other two are just lackeys that just kind of hang around. I don't really see too much value in them, especially when they're beating up on the Usos, and the Usos are the front runners. And again, kind of in what all do you want to do with that? Just, it's not good for their build. It's not doing anything at all for the Wyatt. What do you think?
I think that they're trying to keep this feud going. I think that they're just trading victories to try to keep some breath in this feud. I don't like how they're doing that, though. I've said that many times on the show. I don't like when title holders lose non-title matches all the time. That's just horrible, horrible booking. We can't get away from the art of the number one contenders match. And I do like that the WWE in the past year have kind of revived that concept, the number one contenders match. Unfortunately, they had to do it in really tough situations. But at the same time, I do like the fact that they are doing more of number one contenders matches, because back in the day, I mean, even in the Attitude Era, they would have number one contenders matches on pay-per-views. And so I definitely think that they should revive that, because it really gives mid-card wrestlers an opportunity to shine. Here's the thing. If you had six-man, eight-man number one contenders matches, you know, every quarter, I think that would really give a big batch of mid-card wrestlers something to vie for, even if it's a mid-card title. You have your Damian Sandow's, and I'm sure that Derek will talk about that soon, about Sandow's role on Raw. I mean, you have your Sandow's, your Ziggler's, your Big E's, your Rusev's at this moment. Even Zack Ryder is still around, hiding behind a rock somewhere. And so you have a lot of people who are still in the mid-card jungle, if you will, that are still in need for some type of exposure. And instead of just saying, okay, we'll keep you on the payroll, but we don't have anything for you, we need more mid-card title matches. We need more mid-card tournaments to really make these mid-card championships really, really, something that a wrestler would want. To make them, you know, worth seizing. And I think they're doing a really good job with the U.S. title now, finally, since Sheamus has it. The fact that he's a former world champion and WWE champion, and that he has that mid-card title, it boosts the level of prestige for the U.S. title again. Sheamus as a U.S. champion is a fantastic idea. I absolutely love it. He's doing so much for that title again. And we really need someone like that in the Intercontinental title picture, too. I would be totally fine if a former world champion was Intercontinental champion, like Alberto Del Rio, an RVD, something like that. That even The Miz, a former world champion that, you know, that kind of boosts up the Intercontinental title, because the Intercontinental title at this point is somewhat of a curse to the holders that, you know, has had it the past few years. It does nothing but hurts their career, to be honest with you, because if you think about it, it hurt The Miz's career before Bad News Barrett was Bad News Barrett. Wade Barrett, it hurt his career. It hurt Kofi's career. It didn't do much with to Cody Rhodes' career other than his feud with the Big Show. Didn't do much for Drew McIntyre's career. It just continued to be a curse. Even when Curtis Axel had it, when Big E had it, the past few years it just has not been a really good title to have. Of course, they had the feud a few years back at WrestleMania between The Big Show and Cody Rhodes, which was quite an awkward feud. But at the same time, that's really maybe the last time and had some type of spotlight. Other than that, it's been more of a curse. So they need a world champ. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I'd be totally fine if Kane was the Intercontinental Champion representing the Authority. I'd be totally fine with that.
Fine with that. That wouldn't be bad. Again, any kudos to Kane that he can get.
Yeah.
I want to throw out there, we got Flavor of the Week coming up later tonight, too. And it's going to be part three of what a really interesting Flavor of the Week that it has been as far as alumni of the AWA. We've covered a lot of great names. And Kurt Hennig, Rick Martel, the list is phenomenally long. Vern Gagne, I mean, so much can be said about that guy. Greg Gagne, his son, kind of an enigma in the wrestling world. However, that's going to continue tonight. Stay tuned, 347-884-8452. This is Derek, correspondent of Pancake and Power Slam, giving Chris Featherstone a hand while he's recuperating from his laryngitis, the flu. He gets the flu in
the
summer.
The flu. Yeah, that's a good. You know, that's very interesting. That I was surprised too because it just hit me like crazy on Sunday, and when I got my vitals checked, you know, I was surprised too. Like, you know, a flu in the summertime, but and I was told after I got my vitals checked, the test ran that, you know, it's not uncommon. Interestingly enough, so. Yeah, it was crazy. I had a temperature of 102 degrees on Sunday, and I was just sweating rivers because my body was just so hot, and I was having cold sweats and hot flashes. It was ridiculous. But thankfully, I have an amazing wife, and you know, just a very wonderful supporting cast, and a lot of thoughts and prayers from fans in the Crave Wrestling universe, in the Pancakes and Power Slams universe, to really help me as I recover, and I feel much, 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 much better. Still not 100%, but I've been resting and having some time away from things to really get myself recuperated. So come next week, I'll be guns a-blazing once again, but Derek, you're doing a fantastic job. What else you got, sir?
Hey, let's keep it up. Let's go to Rusev versus RVD. Rusev wins with a camel clutch, and again, RVD's role this time around is apparent that he needs to get the other guys over. Physical specimen to this day, I will say the RVD can carry a match. Maybe not the best last night. However, you know, on better nights, RVD always shows up, does his thing. He's got probably one of the most powerful legs in wrestling. Past, present, I don't want to say future, but obviously it was something great. Rusev again wins with a camel clutch. Classic move from the Iron Sheik. Yes, the correct answer was the Iron Sheik, and I didn't even ask the question. You should have just knew.
Who defeated Bob Backlund for the WWE Championship?
The Iron Sheik.
There you go.
Diapers. Probably even diapers. Probably when he's born yet. I guess show how old I am. But, the Iron Sheik. That's a trivia question. What did he use to swing around to prove his greatness?
Some clubs.
He had those clubs. And who was his manager?
His manager was, It was the Sheik, wasn't it?
Sheik.
The original Sheik.
Oh, what are you talking about? Classy Freddy Blassie.
Oh yeah, it was Blassie because he would do his exhibitions before he was before he would come out, he would do his little exhibitions where he had those two big clubs and he would swing them. I think his name, but here's the thing: when he first came in the WWE, he wasn't the Iron Sheik though. His name wasn't the Iron Sheik. I'm sure the admin team would that's going to, you know, let me know very soon. But I don't – his name was not the Iron Cheek, though. I don't remember what his name was. It'll ring up to me. And something Cosgrove something. I think it was his real name. But I remember when speaking of Iron Cheek, he was also a AWA alumni. He first started off as a face for a very, very, very small time, and then he became, he was the great Hossein Arab. That was his name. And the late 70s, he went to WWE, and he started swinging those Persian clubs, and it was from there. So, yeah, Blassie was his manager, of course, and those clubs were—they looked like they were incredibly heavy. The Grand Wizard—that's what I was thinking of. The Grand Wizard.
Well, let's continue off Monday Night Raw. We have RKO versus Dean Ambrose, and if Ambrose lost, that was the best match of Monday Night Raw, in my opinion, bar none. Ambrose still has a lot to prove. He's putting in his dues. The Shield's behind him now. And like I said earlier, they're all going off in the distant destinies. I think Dean Ambrose is going to surprise a lot of people. He's going to have some longevity. I mean, the guy knows his trade. He knows what he's doing in the ring. He knows where he's at in the ring. But again, the match last night was just back and forth. It was very emotional. It was RKO almost really losing it a few times. Dean Ambrose was able to come back. But, RKO wins the match. Kind of a disappointment. Of course, I expect. RKO is always going to win. He's WWE's golden boy for whatever mark reason. So we'll keep it at that. Dean Ambrose, again, put on a heck of a show last night. The best match of Monday Night Raw, in my opinion.
Well, first of all, let's not skip the Divas, as you so quietly did. Alicia Fox versus Nikki Bella. I mean, it wasn't long, but of course, you know, have to address it because it was one of those things that Nikki Bella is continuing to be utilized as like a whipping girl for, you know, at the expense of Stephanie McMahon with the Stephanie McMahon and Brie Bella feud that's going on right now. Alicia Fox being as crazy as ever, as always. She was supposed to get one hand tied behind her back, and she didn't. She pushed the referee around. She pushed the referee away through the rope and just started beating up on Nikki Bella. And that was it. And as far as Rusev and RVD is concerned, I said this already. Like, I said this previously, that RVD, see, and it bothers me how people a lot of the fans, the marks label putting someone over as like a someone who has a big name losing to someone. I don't want to. Well, I'll say this. I think it bears repetition that you have to have your name, you have to have your character protected if you really want to put someone over. Now, I'm sure you remember this, Derek, when Jericho had that unofficial world title reign on Raw back in the day. I think it was around, I think it was like 2000. When he fought Triple H, and at that point Triple H was almost invincible. So his name was, his gimmick was protected. He rarely lost. And when Jericho beat Triple H on that episode of Raw, the place erupted. I mean, it just went, I mean, the ceiling almost totally capsized because Triple H was the person who hardly ever lost. Now, people like that today are your John Cena's, your Sheamus's, your Randy Orton's, who hardly ever lose. Now, they put people over when they lose matches. Someone like my boy Jericho and now RVD and Kane, they don't put people over. They just lose. And unfortunately, RVD's in that camp now. He just loses. You know that RVD is going to lose the match, and it's gotten to the point where he's past the line of putting people over because his name's not protected anymore. He's just a jobber, and I mean it's tough to say that for someone who's been a WWE champion and ECW champion simultaneously. But at this point, RVD's just a jobber. And we saw that, and we've been seeing that the past couple months.
Agreed, totally agreed. He is a jobber, but he always brings his A-game. And that's the difference that I would put between him and a lot of the other people that you just recently mentioned, as far as that's just their jobbers. They don't protect their name. But again, he just always brings everything to the table. I mean, he can do his own stunts that he always used to do. I don't see any other wrestlers going out and putting that much effort. I really don't. So,
well, Jericho does. Kane does.
So, but I mean, he's, you know, hit or miss, and he's just recently fresh back, and I can't.
Jericho,
wait,
you said Jericho's hit or miss?
He's fresh back, and if you remember last time he was here, he lost a few times. So.
Oh well, Jericho always loses, but every time he steps foot in that ring, he's one of the. I mean, I would say, and I'm not saying that's just because I'm a Jericho mark. I'm saying that's because he's literally, you know, one of the best in the world at what he does. I mean, he's one of the best in-ring performers in pro wrestling history. And so, RVD's good, but he's a little bit careless. I mean, RVD can definitely he's notorious for having those stiff kicks and giving people potato shots. And so he can be a bit careless in the ring. He's very agile. He's very limber, very nimble. And I definitely think that he's a very good hand as far as the pro wrestling scene is concerned. But I mean, Chris Jericho, and I would even say Kane. Kane is an amazing athlete as well. But Jericho and Kane, although two of the best, actually, pro wrestlers that we've ever seen, their name isn't protected. I mean, they just lose. I don't think there's any distinction between RVD and Jericho and Kane anymore. I don't think so. There was, because RVD would win some and then lose a few and then win more, but now he just loses.
He just loses. Another sad dent in the wall and professional wrestling. After that,
yeah,
we got Dick versus Del Rio. The best part of that was in Fandango, of course, and on the commentary table. Tell me that wasn't awesome. That was a highlight of Raw. Ziggler,
no.
Del Rio put up a good match. And Ziggler always, again, he's one of those, he always puts up a good match. And I enjoyed it. Alberto Del Rio for a time. Whatever happened to his ring announcer? Jose Cuervo.
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah. Where's that guy?
He's on the Spanish announce team now.
No, he's not. But anyway, yeah.
He is. He's on the Spanish announce team.
Oh, good. Good for him. He was better as a ring announcer. So, another good match for Raw. What do you think about the Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio?
Every time Del Rio and Ziggler get in the ring, I mean they go at it. They have really good matches. When they had the world title feud last year, granted Ziggler was out because of his concussion, but at the same time they did the double turn at the pay-per-view. Ziggler became a babyface, and Del Rio became a heel. I think that they put on some really, really good matches. The only thing is, I believe, and real quick, Orton and Ambrose, I do agree it was, I think that it was one of the best matches on the night. I think Rowan Harper versus the Usos, I think they got them beat, though. I think every time Rowan and Harper and the Usos get in the ring together, I think that's probably, to be honest with you, I think that the Rowan and Harper and the Usos, I think that that's the best solid wrestling feud of the entire year. I think they've put on some fantastic, fantastic matches. I understand why they want to keep stretching the feud, because they put on some fantastic matches. But you just, like I said, you just can't have the Usos lose non-title matches. That's ridiculous. But, yeah, Orton and Ambrose put on a good match. Ambrose losing cleanly, I don't like that. I think Orton can afford a loss more than Ambrose is. I know they're trying to protect Orton to eventually be fed to Reigns probably in a month or two, probably at SummerSlam. We'll see an Orton versus Reigns feud. A lot of people are saying Reigns versus Triple H, but I'm not quite sure that they'll have Triple H step in the ring. I think that they'll probably kind of pass that over to Orton and Reigns now. But I just don't see much in Dolph Ziggler. I mean, I like Dolph Ziggler a lot. I mean, he's still an internet darling, not as much as he was around this time last year. He was kind of like last year's flavor of the month, because a lot of people just kind of threw him aside. But he's starting to get some more pops slowly but surely, but I think he's reached his glass ceiling. I would put Ziggler and Kofi in a very, very similar position right now. And I think that both Ziggler and Kofi are like Chris Jericho and Kane without the prestigious names. They just lose all the time. Granted, Kofi has won 2 weeks straight, but those are just surprising, unexpected wins that we probably won't see for the next 6 months. But granted, Ziggler, you know, he does a really good job wrestling, but I mean he just doesn't have the name to afford to continue to lose, and it's sad because Ziggler really had a future, but I don't see it anymore.
Don't see it anymore, and haven't seen it for a while. You know, and last night we had the return of Bret Hitman Hart. Come down. I love to see Bret Hart, even though this day, even though he's looking pretty gray and gross. Again, just to go show how old I am. You know, in the mid-90s, you know, Bret Hart was the WWE. He was champion. He was model wrestler. I mean, he carried the flagship. Then came the Attitude Era. Stone Cold, DX took over. Mick Foley, Triple H. But to see Bret Hart again brings back old times, I suppose, when he hears the music hit. Then he had Sandow come out, and I kind of expected something like that to happen. Sandow's been kind of a joke the last few months, and it really seems that Sandow's character, what's going through his mind when he comes down to do that? He knows that it's just for novelty. It's not for legitimate wrestling showcase. He knows it's the bottom of the bill. And are you happy because Sandow, he's getting a paycheck and he's able to show his wrestling skills, but again, his skills are squashed because his matches are squashed. And leading into that, Christmas comes down, broke kick, destroys Sandow. I mean, it was a squash match. Sandow I'm not going to say he's come a long way. He's been there for a while. Money in the Bank winner, had that for so long. Now he's a novelty. Just doesn't. Even Bret Hart deserves a little better promo than that. But then you have what we ended up with last night on Raw, and it's kind of saddening.
I'll lean more towards agreeing with what you're saying, just because I think that Sandow had such a promising future to his character. I think that he was beating some big names when he first came. He beat Kane and he beat Daniel Bryan, two former world champions. So I definitely think that he had the potential, and I mean, he won the Money in the Bank last year too, and had a really good match against John Cena. Could have been world champ at the time, but I think it was. See, I think he got the too much too soon treatment, because you just really got to learn how to build a character. I understand that he was there for a little bit before he got Money in the Bank. But here's the thing. They weren't properly building up Sandow to even have him win the Money in the Bank briefcase. Before that, it was Team Road Scholars. They were winning some. They were losing some. They weren't a very prestigious tag team. They didn't even win the tag team championship. So they came close a few times, but they never won. So it was just a real shocker. I really didn't understand why they had Sandow win, and it just didn't fit. It just didn't look right. I really think it was a bad idea to make Sandow the Money in the Bank briefcase winner without a proper build of his character. And it's just we've seen that they pushed Curtis Axel too fast. They pushed Ryback too fast. You can't be a victim of the too much too soon treatment in the WWE, because it happens. We've seen it. I just named three people that it happened to. And to be honest with you, I'll give Del Rio the same thing. He had too much too soon. Within the first year of his career in the WWE, he was, Royal Rumble winner. He feuded with Mysterio, beat him up, feuded with Christian, beat him up, and won the Royal Rumble, and then eventually, still in his career, still early in his career, he won the Money in the Bank. He won a couple of WWE Championship reigns. I mean, he was just piling on, all of these resume building, achievements, but his character was not established enough. It was a good character, it was catchy, but it was just too much too soon. That's why I really hope that they just really hone in to Roman Reigns' character and take some time with it. They have to take some time with it. Damian Sandow is – Fandango is another one, to be honest with you. Jericho puts him over at WrestleMania, his first match in the WWE ring as Fandango. He beats Jericho at WrestleMania too much too soon, way too much too soon, and it backlashed on him. It was a bad idea, and unfortunately it hurt him more than helped him. So that's just four people I named that were recipients of the too much too soon treatment. And unfortunately, Sandow's one of those people. Now he's coming out as Damian Sandhart, getting punched by a nearly 60-year-old Bret Hart, and getting bro kicked by Sheamus, and looking very awkward and ridiculous in pink and black. Only Bret Hart and Owen Hart could work that out. I think Jim Not Hart did a pretty good job too, but
Jim
definitely
Not
a victim of the two. He was the best out of the bunch?
No, he was excellent. I mean, he carried the pink and black just like anyone else could. Attack.
I agree. I think that Jim Neidhart is very underrated as far as his character is concerned. He definitely wasn't the top 50 of wrestling ability. But I definitely think that he had a powerhouse feel to him. He reminds me of Road Warrior Animal a lot, as far as his wrestling skill set, as far as his wrestling style. Short statured type of person, although Animal was a little, he had Anvil on height, but Neidhart was just, he had a gut the size of, Texas and back. But at the same time, he had a really... He had a very stout, strong stature to him. And I think that he was just, I think he was an underrated wrestler. I mean, of course, he had his heyday wrestling in the Heart with the Heart Foundation, and it's really about it. But, I mean, you know, Stampede Wrestling had some time in WCW and NWA. I mean, Anvil's been around for a long time, which raises the question, should Jim Neidhart be in the WWE Hall of Fame?
He should be in the WWE Hall of Fame as the Heart Foundation. I don't think he should be in by himself. I don't, you know, nothing against him. But, you know, he was always more of a sidekick. But that's what he was good at. That was his thing. He was the powerhouse. He wasn't the brain. He was the brawn. But anyway, executed that. And it reminds me of, like, Demolition Smash almost. I mean, you just went in there and you just pound on your back and knock you out. But that's what the Anvil was. But moving on, we got Y2J versus The Miz. I did not expect Y2J to come out. It was such a relief. It was great. That was another. It was another good match between two people. I know in the past, on Pancakes and Power Slam, 347-884-8452, that The Miz and Jericho have a bit of similarities between them as far as maybe Miz was kind of like Jericho 10, 12 years ago. Well, probably more than that. Again, goes to show how old I am. But it just seems that, the match was great, and then you had Wyatt come out.
We're the same age, Derek. You're making me feel old.
Well, you know what? I think about it. 12 years ago was what? 2002. Jericho was there 2 years before that. So, 3 years
true.
Before that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time flies. But again, Y2J came out awesome. Give us, what do you think about that? I know you love Y2J. I love Y2J as much. Total Jericho-holic.
Absolutely, man. Jericho's my boy. And for once, it was good to see him win a match. But it's quite obvious that the reason why they're doing this was just totally to feed him to Bray Wyatt. So for this run, they want to protect his character. They want to protect his gimmick in order for him to put Bray Wyatt over. The only thing is that I wish that they would have stretched this out. I think, you know, why in the world would you bring Miz in as a Hollywood character? He had a very lackluster face run, does a movie, comes back with a new Hollywood persona, a new entrance. I mean, new entrance type of an intro, interlude type of thing. And I think that the I Came to Play music, get rid of it. If you really want this Hollywood gimmick to work, get rid of that awesome I Came to Play. No, don't change the music. I like the intro video that they do before he comes out. It works. The only thing is they're giving him this gimmick and he's losing. Why in the world would he start off losing with this gimmick? So what they should have done is they should have had him beat your Zack Ryders, beat your, you know, to be honest with you, unfortunately, it hurts me to say this, but beat your Dolph Ziggler's, beat your Diego's, or, you know, people like that, just to kind of get some type of credibility to his name again. And, I mean, and even at this point, beat your RVDs. To put some type of credibility to his name, and they should have done Miz and Jericho at Battleground and should have saved Jericho and Wyatt for SummerSlam. That would have been the best option to do that. But just to have a regular match between Jericho and The Miz, I mean, come on now. What happened to spending some time and working with the character, with working with the build? I wrote this on wrestling.com a few weeks ago, the power of the slow build. I mean, just wrestling today does not appreciate the power of a slow build with what it comes with characters and storylines. I mean, back in our day, we watched Clash of the Champions and Saturday Night's Main Event. And those two shows, you know, they came, by the time they came on, you know, sometimes it would be quarterly, you know, bi-monthly, and we would have to endure a long build between, you know, Hogan Orndorff or, you know, Hennig and Hart or Hogan and Andre or Savage and Steamboat. So it's like we had to endure those long feuds, and it really made us appreciate the culmination match at the end. Nowadays, we don't have that. We have a match on Raw, and it's over with. And I don't think they should have done that with Jericho and Miz. I think they should have stretched it out. I think it would have gave Jericho much more of credibility because he's known for putting people over now, unfortunately. But I think it would have gave Jericho much more credibility to eventually be fed to Bray Wyatt if Jericho and The Miz would have actually had a feud going into Battleground, which is in, you know, 2.5 weeks. Jericho beats The Miz, and then Jericho puts Bray Wyatt over. I think that would have been much better.
Yeah, Jericho put Bray Wyatt over. Obviously going to happen. Again, you have these pay-per-views that are so close together. And it was just the weekend before, I guess that's a month. Battleground, but they're just weak matches or weak cards. Why would you want to pay for that? And I understand people have WWE Network now, and all that's good and gravy, but it just takes away from that. You don't have the, like it used to be, I couldn't wait for the pay-per-view. I could not wait. I mean, that would consume, you know, Monday Night Raw was just little footsteps into the pay-per-view, and the pay-per-view was where everything happened. That was the pinnacle of the whole wrestling feud, and now it's just like another stepping stone. Fourth stepping stone to get the SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and I guess that's where you have your longevity, but the feuds just don't last that long. They find something huge and spectacular and just throw it on us a couple weeks prior to the SummerSlam and Royal Rumble. And it's just, the feuds are over and done within night and day, and it's boring, it's kind of tiresome. I reminisce for the old Saturday Night Main Events and the old Clash of the Champions because you knew something was going to happen with a special show. Monday Night Raw is just a typical run-of-the-mill wrestling show. And it, you know, it just kind of adds to the feud, but then the feud just doesn't let it go to the point where this is going to explode. Nothing explodes anymore, Chris. You know what I mean? There's no more explosions in wrestling.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, even when you had those Clash of the Champions matches, of course you would have some undercard matches that weren't very exciting. You would have like a freshly heel turn Lex Luger against jumping Joey Maggs, you know, but at the same time, you know, it still was about developing a character. And, you know, of course you had jobbers at the time, and Joey Maggs didn't win much matches, you know, his day, and Jim Powers didn't win much matches, you know, many matches in his day. Iron Mike Sharp and, you know, all of those people who were on the jobber list, the lifetime jobber list. Barry Horowitz is another person, except for his GWF run. His GWF run was pretty decent. And we're talking about alumni. Our next batch of alumni and Flavor of the Week is going to be from GWF, from Global Wrestling Federation. That's going to be quite fun. But I definitely think that I had a conversation with a good friend of mine, and he's a proponent of bringing back like legitimate jobbers, and I just don't think that there's no room for that. For legitimate jobbers, but at the same time, it's like the names that we see on air, they have became really the legitimate jobbers. I mean, people like Zack Ryder and Yoshitatsu before he got released, JTG before he got released, Curt Hawkins before he got released, they were jobbers, you know, unfortunately, because they're very talented. And the jobbers that we saw back then were just, you know, just plumbers, you know, from down the street that they just kind of put a singlet on and gave about $50. But nowadays, it's not like that. So, but the thing is, the problem with that is that there's so many pay-per-views that are so closely knit within each other that the WWE creative team really don't have time to really develop mid-card stars. Thankfully, we are seeing more of that now more than ever because for some reason I think Triple H is starting to get more of a hand on the product as far as the WWE is concerned. I know NXT is his baby, and we see a ton of amazing action in NXT. You know, special shout-out to the Tyson Kidd and Adrian Neville. Their matches have been gold on NXT. But I think that I just really think it's time to really develop more characters, more mid-card. The money is in the mid-card. I mean, that is something that I will hold true to until I can no longer watch. I'm no longer able to watch professional wrestling, physically able to watch professional wrestling. The money is in the mid-card. You have mid-card stars that you have to groom. I mean, period. I've said it many, many times. You think about the biggest names in wrestling history, minus Hulk Hogan, The Undertaker. You think of the biggest names in wrestling history, your Flairs, your Stings, your Lugers, your Savages, to be honest with you, your Cenas, your Jerichos, your Guerreros, your Mysterios, all of them had to go through the mid-card, establish themselves, Rock, Austin, you name it, they had to go through the mid-card to become a star, even Triple H. And the money is in the mid-card. I mean, and it's a tried and true theory. The problem is WWE does not see that now, but it's a theory that's never going to fail. The money is in the mid-card. That's why, like I said before, you have these people who's had too much too soon and really didn't have a really good mid-card stint like your Rybacks and your Sandows and your Curtis Axels, although he was an Intercontinental Champion. That was thrown at him. But the money's in the mid-card. You have to really spend some time and really groom a character to make him the next guy. Look at Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan had... He was an NXT. The Miz was his pro in NXT. Mind you, Daniel Bryan has more ring and wrestling experience than The Miz. But he was the rookie and The Miz was the pro. And that's totally backwards because Daniel Bryan has much, much longer wrestling experience, probably about 6 or 7 years longer wrestling experience than The Miz does. So it's one of those things that, even with that though, he had to go through NXT. He became United States Champion, had a run through the mid card, and then became World Champion. I mean, it never fails. Look at Randy Orton. He was Intercontinental Champion before he was World Champion. Just look at Kane. You know, he had his one night, you know, reign, which, you know, a lot of people just toss away, but even he was Intercontinental Champion, you know, before he got his next world title shot. So, I mean, it never fails, man. The WWE just need to spend some time really grooming look at The Miz. I mean, The Miz was U.S. champion before he was world champion. So it goes on and on, man. And I really think that now's the time to really, you know, like I said, the money's in the mid-card. Now is the time to really groom the Roman Reigns and the Cesaros and the Bray Wyatt. Don't give them too much too soon. Don't treat them like a Ryback. Ryback is the the perfect example of someone who received too much too soon, and it completely backfired.
Yeah, backfired, and we'll see what goes on with that. And, it's, again, you bring up very interesting points. Too much too soon, I mean, that's what they thrive on nowadays, I suppose. It takes somebody like us to really realize that, you know, this isn't working. This is what worked in the past. Let's make it more interesting. Wrestling does give you that interesting, I can't wait for this to happen type of feel. Because you know it's going to happen, because if anything, it'll be a rematch on Raw. After that, we have the Divas match, AJ and Paige versus the Funkadactyl. Another squash match. Kind of wonder what they're doing putting AJ and Paige together since last week they were nemesis. But, again, the Divas division has been kind of in an upturn lately. And I apologize for missing the first one. Wrote it out of context. But it happens. It's professional wrestling talk. So, again, Divas match, AJ and Paige against the Funkadactyls. I'm surprised they're still around seeing how their leader, Brodus Clay, has been axed.
He has been, unfortunately. Now he's promoting, you know, protecting dolphins in Japan. But I can see Naomi, though. Here's the thing. Cameron's getting more of a an individual persona. Cameron's just a natural heel. I mean, for those who watched Tough Enough a few years back, I mean, this girl said her favorite match was like, I don't know, chat room, help me out on this, or Twitter at Crave Wrestling. It was something like Melina versus Victoria, or Melina versus Ashley, or it was something just ridiculously absurd. She just threw like two names. No, I think it was like Alicia Fox versus Melina or something like that. It was just absolutely ridiculous. And she just had no experience, no knowledge of wrestling. Austin just grilled her a new one, and just it was just absolutely funny because she just had such a cockiness to her. It just didn't back it up at all. I mean, she was decent. She wasn't very good at all. And the very fact that, you know, Austin just basically just drilled her a new one, and she still got a spot on the WWE roster. I mean, I suppose that maybe someone who was on the agent staff thought she was good looking, possibly. I don't know. Maybe someone thought she had potential, but we didn't see a lot of her potential, but now we're starting to see Cameron's potential. And I will give her kudos. She is getting a lot better in the ring, and she's starting to really become herself, which I like. She has a natural heel persona. And Naomi's just amazing in the ring. She has been very much, even I followed her when she was with FCW. She was really good. She was very good. And I'm excited to see more of her in the ring. This Funkadactyl split, it was inevitable. And I will agree with you. Eventually, okay, you're coming out, you know, somebody call my mama's song. Brodus Clay's not around. Xavier Woods is not around. You guys are just really, you know, it's really kind of getting redundant. Needs a bit of a difference, bit of a change. The only thing is, I don't want to see Paige turn heel. Now, I know she had some good runs, you know, in NXT, but I like Face Paige. I just like Face Paige. There's something about Face Paige that's just really charming to me. Charming and spunky. Face Paige is where it's at. I'd rather see a heel AJ than a heel Paige. But it just really seems like they're kind of going that route with turning Paige heel. And I don't like it. I don't want it to happen, but I think it's going to. And I think that Paige is being super nice to AJ to eventually make that turn. But I just don't see AJ. I'm just not interested in AJ anymore. I'll be honest with you. I'm not interested. When she had the title, It was just not very exciting. When Paige actually had it, there was a lot of Divas matches, and she would actually defend the title a lot. AJ hardly ever defended the title, and it wasn't very fun. And I just kind of feel like it's going to get that way again. AJ with the title does not interest me.
Yeah, it doesn't, because it's something we've seen before, and it just kind of old. And after that, we got Cesaro versus Kofi. Kofi wins again, and we've said so much, and we've mentioned him tonight. Kofi Kingston. I mean, I don't understand. This isn't really that funny. I get it. Give the guy a few props, but just to let him win twice. I mean, it's exciting. Good for Kofi. We're happy for him. But really not too sure what's going to come out of his constant winning, because he's going to be back in the losing chart. This guy is not a he's not ready to be a contender.
I totally agree. there's not much to say about this. We're not going to see any type of push for Kofi Kingston in this regard. If we want to think outside the box, maybe Big E continuing to help Kofi may lead to a Big E heel turn, which I don't want to see, or it may lead to a Kofi turn, which I wouldn't mind seeing. But a heel Kofi versus Big E, I'd be for that. It'd be something different for Kofi. I was sharing with Ryan, I think it was yesterday or the day before, Ryan Fuca, one of our Pancakes and Power Slams correspondents. He has his own segment that he frequently on the Pancakes and Power Slam show called the Ryan's Den. He was one of the original, he was the original co-host of Pancakes and Power Slams, and went into the correspondent role. He does a great job of doing that. I definitely think that, and Ryan and I, we talk all the time, and we talk multiple times a week about wrestling. But we've been friends for a dozen years now. But a lot of the portion of our talking is wrestling. And I was explaining to him that I think that Kofi turning heel and being some star in NXT would work for me, because it would be something different, it would be something new, and I just think that for all the years that Kofi Kingston has been in the WWE, I think it's been about 7 years now. It was 07 when he came in. So for all the years that he's been in the WWE, he's been the same SOS. He was first Jamaican. Now he's, built from his original hometown in Ghana, West Africa. He's the same thing. I mean, he's like John Cena without the world title reigns and markability. I mean, he's the same thing. That's the reason why people don't like John Cena, because he's stale and monotonous. He's a much better wrestler, much better wrestler than Kofi Kingston is. I mean, excuse me, he's a much better wrestler than John Cena is, but he has a really stale, monotonous, redundant, same old character. I mean, it was 06, I believe, 07, yeah, it was 07, it was 07 when he first came in, because he came in ECW, that's when he debuted. He came in ECW, I remember the vignettes they would have too, he became Intercontinental Champ within like the first year of him coming, so They had some promise. They had some stock in him, but no, he's damaged goods at this time. That's the best way to describe Kofi Kingston. Damaged goods, and I'm not a big proponent of someone having to make a heel or a face turn to really revived their character. I don't think that that's the automatic default answer in every character, but I definitely think that Kofi needs to make a turn. He needs to make a heel turn. Yeah, that's really the only thing that would save his character.
I don't even know if that would save his character. He makes a heel turn, still Kofi Kingston at the end of the day. And we got El Torito versus Bo Dallas. I've got nothing else to say. Man, it was a dumb match. Don't even want to talk about it. After that, we got Edward
a midget. Strong. A midget didn't believe. That's the best way to describe it.
I don't know if we're allowed to say midget on the radio. But anyway.
I'm sorry. Well, a short person.
American. And so we got John Cena versus Rollins. Ambrose prevented Rollins from passing in. Randy Orton came then changed. Charged in looking to hurt Cena. And it's just another melee. I thought Raw kind of began on a sour note. I think kind of ended on a sour note. So John Cena in Raw. I mean, that's just another save, another whatever it is. So let's finish up Raw with your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick before we go into Flavor of the Week, I just really think that I actually thought about this. I think the ending was kind of dumb where they just kind of kept bracing each other's arms. I think that was just pointless. But I like the leak. I like the potential that we're seeing with a John Cena and Roman Reigns feud. But here's the thing. Save that until WrestleMania. Don't, like I said before, do not give Roman Reigns the too much, too soon treatment. Do not do it. Roman Reigns has to have a mid-card championship. Have Rusev beat Sheamus. Have Rusev run through some mid-carders from SummerSlam to Survivor Series. That's 3 months to have the U.S. title. And then have Roman Reigns defeat Rusev at Survivor Series in November. So you'll have, you know, a good, you know, 5-6 months, and Roman Reigns can even do pull an Ultimate Warrior. You know, he can be mid-card champ and world champ at the same time. You know, it's been, 24 years since that happened at WrestleMania, so why not do it again? He can go in being a U.S. champ and go against John Cena, you know, who's champ at the time after going back and forth with Brock Lesnar. And I think I would like a Roman Reigns and John Cena feud. So when I think about this, I see some promise. I think Cena and Reigns is money. I think that's a money feud. It just has to be done right, though. It'll work, but it just has to be done right.
It's got to be done right. And that's will it be done right? We don't know. I doubt it because WWE is just too impatient to let these things build. But that was Monday Night
Raw.
That's
unfortunate. That's a great point. It's very unfortunate that happens, but they just have to be more patient. This is such a money feud. It has to be more patient.
After that, we got Flavor of the Week. Did you want to go over ROH?
Yeah, real quick, congratulations to Gail Kim for winning the Knockouts Championship, her fourth reign, and just congratulations to Michael Elgin for winning his first ROH World Championship by defeating Adam Page at Best in the World a couple of weeks ago. And 2 weeks ago was a kind of like a tribute show for him, and then last week was we saw World of Worlds. The kind of like the super show that Japan and ROH did that was absolutely phenomenal. So great partnership with New Japan and ROH, and hopefully we'll see more.
All right, here we go. Flavor of the Week. This is Flavor of the Week, episode 119. We're going to continue AWA's Best Alumni. I mean, we've had some great names so far with Kurt Hennig, and we just keep going on and on. I mean, AWA was a breeding ground for what molded 80s professional wrestling into what eventually molded today's professional wrestling. Not from the same cut or the same breed, but still there. I want to start off with none other than Larry Zbysko. When I think of Larry Zbysko, honestly, I think of Monday Nitro, WCW. I know he came from AWA, but with his feud with Scott Hall just coming out, Larry Zbysko. Larry Zbysko was, I mean, he was an awesome heel. AWA, he was a mainstay there. I think it was Vern Gagne's son-in-law, I believe, or something of that nature. But cut his teeth with AWA, went on to NWA, WCW. He was just another great alumni. We've got a few more to go over. I mean, what's your take on Larry Zbysko?
Yeah, real quick, Larry Zbysko really became who he was in around 1979, 1980, when he was like a prodigy to Bruno Sammartino, and then he made that big old heel turn going against Sammartino in an exhibition match. And that became one of the best feuds, and I think it was 1980, one of the best feuds of 80. But a lot of people don't remember that part of Zbysko. They remember the AWA, and a lot of people don't even remember the AWA part, in which he was, you know, 2-3-time world champ, you know, in the AWA. So I think his most successful part of his career actually was in the AWA, so definitely can't overlook that. But yeah, his stints in the WWE his stints in the WCW NWA, to me they were forgettable. He was more of a commentator role in Nitro. Of course, he had some NWO affiliation, but that's quite forgettable to me compared to his AWA and WWWF run back in the 80s.
Next up, we got Nord the Barbarian. And a lot of people remember him as the Berserker in WWE.
Yeah.
Nord the Barbarian, I mean, he was managed by Black Bar. I believe he teamed Bruiser Brody a few times. They were legitimate tech. They took on Greg Gagne and Jimmy Snuka in the triple main event at WrestleRock 86. He had long standing, and I mean, he went on to the big stages of WWE. He was a Berserker. Well, he started out as a Viking Berserker.
Yep.
Didn't really have a whole big impact. I think he feuded with Bulldog a few times. And for him, AWA was his main time, his stomping ground, and really made a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's the thing with the Berserker is that, man, this guy really could have made it. I mean, when he had his short WCW run, but specifically in the WWE when he feuded with The Undertaker, it was very brief, but it really could have done something for his career. It really could have catapulted his career feuding with The Undertaker. He had his heyday was in AWA, but as the Berserker, holding his hand out and saying, "Huss," funny, very, very funny, and with his sword. Him and Taker, I think, could have worked, but they never really decided to go too far with that.
After that, we have his real name is Dan Will, and a lot of people know him as the Trooper with AWA. He was also, for a really, really small stint in WWE, he was the Patriot. He came out, red, white, blue. He had the face mask on, red, white, and blue. And this is somebody I always thought he had the body, he had the build. I thought he had the in-ring technique to really go off and make a big name for himself. However, it was kind of squashed in the WWE. And the AWA is a Trooper. I mean, he had pretty big success. But again, he was somebody. He feuded with the Hart Foundation, and then he was just totally gone. He never saw or heard from him again. He wrestled a lot of the game. Again, breeding ground was AWA with Vern Gagne.
Yeah, I think with Del Wilkes, we'll talk more about Del Wilkes. We got a couple minutes here. We'll talk more about Del Wilkes when we get to the GWF. I want to save that for GWF. great mention, though, because his AWA run did kind of catapult him to his Patriot gimmick. We'll get more into that when we talk about the GWF alumni.
Get more to that, and then we have Eric Bischoff. Everybody, if you don't know who Eric Bischoff is and you call yourself a wrestling fan, then you're not a wrestling fan, you're a nobody. You're just a mark, you're a jobber. Eric Bischoff revolutionized professional wrestling. He made the Attitude Era for WWE what it was, and he just made the Monday Night Rating Wars. Eric Bischoff is, there's Vince McMahon, right underneath him is Eric Bischoff.
Absolutely. You said it all. I think starting from a commentator to becoming the biggest name in WCW history, you know, kudos to AWA for that.
AWA. And the last I want to mention, Hulk Hogan. Of course, again, you're a wrestling fan. You don't know much about Hulk Hogan. You're not a wrestling fan. Know the past. Know the present. Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hogan, it's all legitimate. Hulk Hogan, hands down. AWA, went to the WWE, enough said.
Absolutely. The biggest name in professional wrestling history started in the AWA as a heel, and it worked. And I think that Gagne, and I've said this before on the show, Gagne missed the boat on Hogan. I even wrote an article about it on wrestling.com. Gagne missed the boat because he wasn't willing to compromise with Hogan wanting to get his, you know, money from merch sold in Japan, you know, from merchandise and Japan sales and time spent in Japan. And just Gagne was just so adamant about being stingy in that way that he missed the boat on just the revolution of Hulkamania. I think that was probably Gagne's worst decision that he's ever made.
Yeah, and again, Hulk Hogan, number one in wrestling history as far as name goes. Everybody knows who Hulk Hogan is. Episode 119. This is it. Another one in the box. We've got so much more to talk about. 90 minutes is never enough. 347-884-8452. I'm Derek, Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. Chris Featherstone joined us. He runs the show. However, this week he handed it over to me. I did the most I could with it. Tweet, chat room, Crave Wrestling. Let me know how I did. Tell me that I stink. Tell me that I'm awesome. I don't care because I'm going to be here next week. So, on all of you. This way. And we got here. Power Slams. Any last words?
Absolutely, man. Derek, you are the man. Thank you so much for taking the reins of the show. Thank you for everyone who has been really supportive with me through this time of recovering from the flu. Continue to pray. Continue to really support, you know, follow at Chris Prolific. You know, it's my personal Facebook page for my status in recovering from this flu. Feel a lot better. I'm going to continue to recover from that. You know, special shout out to everyone who continues to support Crave Wrestling. Of course, you know, the people that I write for, wrestling.com, bleacherreport.com, wearewrestling.net, continue to support them. Until next week, oh, I absolutely loved it, Derek. Great job. Definitely will not be the end of that. Well, I'll give you the reins again. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. Daddy loves Elijah, and God bless. Goodbye.